as being anything special. I mean, I love the game. My father said, if you work hard, good things will happen. And boy, oh boy, he was absolutely right. I worked hard in the game because I had to. I wasn't talented enough to just get by on ability. When you sign your name, I'm a big believer in, when you sign your name on a dotted line, it's more than just playing a game of baseball. And there's a responsibility when you put that uniform on, that those people who pay to go watch you play, you're responsible. You gotta make good decisions and show people how things are supposed to be done.
Welcome back in the Zone Hour 2. That was Tony Gwynn from his Hall of Fame speech a few years ago. Passed away yesterday at the young age of 54. And a sad story, and one of the great guys in sports, a guy that went about his business. We talked to Kevin McReynolds yesterday, who was a former teammate of his in San Diego, said he was just a good guy to be around, great energy, positive, always in a good mood. And the interesting thing to me was, Pat, that stood out, and I've got a top nine list, because I like to have these random top lists, but sure, no, it's problem. Top 10 Tuesday, we're not going to quite get there, is that we don't have enough of these kinds of guys to celebrate. The Tim Duncans of the world, and it's interesting that he passed away and Tim Duncan wins a championship in the same week, but you're talking about two of the most soft-spoken, talented, I mean, just non-controversial guys as far as achieving an unbelievably high level and being not controversial or edgy in any way, guys. And these are the people that, if you ask an American what's a perfect athlete for you, that's the kind of thing they're looking for. But typically, we don't get very many guys like that, it seems like, or at least we don't celebrate them enough.
You don't. And both guys, what they have in common is not only did they play in the same for the same organization throughout their career.
Yeah, that's another unique thing.
But they both went back and was still involved and somewhat and kept up relationships with their college as well. I can remember Tim Duncan, we played at Wake Forest. I can remember him being at the game with his cutie little girlfriend at the time who he just divorced, or he's going to get ready to divorce. Oh. But anyway.
I guess he's not a peach all the time.
Tony Gwynn went back to San Diego State. Of course, he's from Southern California. And that just had to be a dream for him to still be a part of that community after growing up there, playing with San Diego State and then the Padres. But it's just amazing when you hear about the stories of him using a size 31 bat.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Is it 31
or
33?
That's what they were saying. I thought it was 33, and they continued to say 30 over and over 31.
Huh. That's
and
tiny.
Which, yeah. Either way, 31 or 33.
I used a 31 bat like when I was probably 13 years old,
yeah,
12 years old.
I can remember like looking at the 33 size and saying, I can't wait to get to use that at 14, 15, 16.
Yeah, he's 33, 34.
His hands were so small. He couldn't even palm a basketball, but was just incredible in terms of the preparation he had.
I reached out to U.S. Reed yesterday. Somebody had insinuated that he might have played against him. He said he hadn't. He said he graduated right before that. They were in the same 81 draft, though. U.S. was taken, I don't know what, third or fourth round or whatever, and Gwynn was taken like in the 10th round by the Clippers. But he said he was already gone. Yeah, but he said Jimmy Dykes and a couple other guys he had mentioned were on that team. Ethan says 33 length, 31 ounces. So 33, 31 would have been a fairly average size, I suppose, but probably pretty short by
major league. Yeah, pretty average for 14-year-old.
For guys like us. Or even, I mean, I used a 33-inch bat in high school, but it wasn't 31 ounces because it was aluminum. But
well, I mean, it's
regardless.
The major leagues.
I don't know what a major league bat typically is. I don't know what they use 35-inch bats, 36.
I do know that those guys are pretty thick, and we know professional baseball players, and they're pretty strong cats.
Jim Harris of Sporting Life Arkansas joining us now, sportinglifearkansas.com. And Jim might know. Do you have any idea what the average length of a major league bat is, Jim? I mean, honestly.
Not really. I looked at pictures of him hitting last night. I know he was a smaller guy, but I mean his bat was reasonable. It wasn't. It was lighter, but it was it was a reasonable length bat.
Okay, I'll take that as a no because they make a big deal about it. All right.
He was different in his approach to hitting. He a bunch of teachers teach. The instructors want the hitters to get a lot of backspin on the ball. You hit kind of down and through.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of backspin. The ball will travel a little further with backspin than topspin. You'll hit a lot of, you know, high bouncing ground outs if you, you know, topspin the ball down. Well, his, I don't know how he managed to do it. I guess in light of his passing, I kind of want to read some more about him. But his style of hitting, he professed to hit it almost like, or he was able to hit it dead center, all just about all the time, and hit what essentially was a knuckleball. It had no spin as the ball was going out into the outfield. You see, it's kind of unusual. I think it's very unusual. You don't see a lot of balls hit quite like that, but he would hit balls coming off his bat were almost could be described as a knuckleball. I mean, just the way they had no spin.
According to Yahoo Answers, which I don't know if this is an official number, but 34 inches and 31 ounces. So, I mean, it's not that much different. This also says that Babe Ruth's bat was about 36 ounces. Inches and 50 ounces.
50 ounces.
Can you believe that? I don't know about that.
Well, that's
I can believe it, actually.
The 20 biggest bats in Major League history.
Popped off his bat, and he could swing them hard, I guess.
Here's the
Go ahead.
There's
I
a list. Yeah, Bleacher Report's got a list of the 20 biggest bats. Babe Ruth. Oh, come on now.
Is somebody being dirty over there?
It says the Sultan of Swat was said to have used a 54-ounce hickory bat during the early stages of his career. He would use different bats throughout his career, including a 36-inch, 46-ounce monster used to hit the first home run on opening day at then-new Yankee Stadium in 1923. He would use lighter bats as his career progressed, using a 40-ounce bat during his 60-homer season in 27. That's pretty amazing. That's a lot of bat. Yikes.
That's a lot of bad.
Well, the ball was a little different earlier in his career, too.
Yeah.
So by 27, they were, you know, tighter wound balls. And,
some of the numbers.
A lesser bat.
Some of the numbers we realized about Tony Gwynn yesterday, Jim, were amazing. The one that, one of the very impressive numbers that stood out was that he only batted under 300 one time. It was his first year in the league, and he batted like 289 in limited plate appearances. And what did he win, like 9 batting titles, that we said?
I believe so.
I mean, just an incredible career. One of the other stats that I saw this morning that stood out to me, mostly because of the fact that I named my kid after this guy, Greg Maddux, talking about facing Tony Gwynn. He faced him more than anyone else, 107 times. He struck Tony Gwynn out 0 times in 107 matchups. Yeah. That's incredible. He said, you just can't do it. Sometimes hitters can pick up differences in spin. They can identify pitchers if there are different release points or if a curveball starts with an upward hump as it leaves the pitcher's hand. But if a pitcher can change speeds, every hitter is helpless, limited by human vision, except for that blanking Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
That's awesome. 107 times he never struck it. I got to think I could face some major league pitchers and batters and strike them out at least once if I had 107 cracks at it.
You?
Yeah.
You personally?
You think somebody would have an off day and strike out at least once.
Yeah. Wouldn't happen.
Preparation was through the roof.
It wouldn't be Travis Wood, apparently, from what I saw yesterday, but it may be someone. I don't know.
Travis Wood can do anything.
Apparently so. A day after, if you missed it, a day after winning in a matchup with A.J. Burnett and the struggling Philadelphia Phillies, he gets the game-winning hit yesterday, a double, in the 13th inning in a victory over Miami. He comes off the bench to pinch hit. What a slap in the face for if you're a hitter, and they're like, sorry, bro, could you sit down? We're going to get a pitcher up here to hit for you.
You know, and he's the perfect example for guys who weren't necessarily already viewed as a major leaguer waiting to happen when he was 9 or 10 years old. The story is he didn't even make the baseball league when he was 9 down the street. And it turned out that, he just developed into player. And I'll say this too. I knew Torrey Hunter in Pine Bluff when he was in that 9 to 12 age.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not have, looked out on the field and thought, man, Torrey Hunter is, already head and shoulders better than anybody else on this field. I mean, it was, not the case at all. But
he played with some pretty good athletes who went on to have some success, too. Not quite to his level, but yeah.
He did, but he's the one that between ages 13 and 18 made that kind of development that you find in probably the majority of guys who make the majors. The guys who you'll see starring in Williamsport and that kind of thing here in August, and who will look like the next sure thing. Sure, there's a Jim Palmer out of every group, too, but there's also guys who pretty well are bigger and stronger than anybody at 12, and then that's about as big as they're going to get. People eventually pass them. It's just an interesting situation.
Yeah, this is passed along to me by one of my buddies, Ben, who's a big St. Louis fan, who says, Gwynn had more doubles than strikeouts. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. That is insane.
I think he only had, didn't he either average 17 strikeouts a year or something, which is pretty
I think
incredible.
I saw something like 400 and something in 10,000 at bats or something.
And then he also, his career average, I think this is right. I read it last night. The leading batter in baseball right now is batting 337, and his career average is 338.
Yeah.
His career average is higher than what anybody's hitting this year.
That's ridiculous. Let's shift over to golf for a minute, Jim. We were just talking about the horrific U.S. Open TV ratings. How much of this do you think had to do with a German leading? How much do you think it had to do with the fact that he had a huge gap in his lead between him and second place? And how much of it do you think had to do with Tiger Woods not playing?
Well, I think it had all that is all that's factored in. I think first, you lose a big segment of people who aren't really that much of a golf fan, but are, you know, a Tiger Woods fan or a fan of, watching Superman compete, I guess. In a sport that they really don't follow. So you lose a good percentage there. By Saturday, the tournament was almost decided, by a guy that, sadly, the average person who follows golf a little bit, maybe unfamiliar with Martin Keimer. I heard another show yesterday that sort of made fun of his name and who won. That he's just a no name. But he was number one in 2011 in the world. He was number one in the world.
What show was that, Jim?
Not carried on your network.
Oh, really?
I was just checking the dial.
I understand. I'm not offended.
No, and it wasn't at your time of the day either. But anyway, back to Keimer. Maybe he doesn't have the charisma of Roy McIlroy. Phil Mickelson was pretty much out of it. He gets a lot of viewers. There's a ton of reasons why. And then I saw one that I don't necessarily agree with. Everybody's got their own opinions, obviously, but some people talked about how Pinehurst number two looked on television, but that it wasn't that pretty on TV, and that some people watch golf like the Masters, like that a tournament like that on a pristine course, just because it looks so pretty on television. It looks like a painting for 5 hours, I guess.
Yeah.
I slept through a lot of it. I'll tell you, Sunday, it was a sleepy day of watching golf. It wasn't any different to me than watching maybe the Phoenix Open.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was. I just think it wasn't because it didn't look as good. It wasn't because Keimer was the leader. It was because of the fact that it just wasn't competitive.
You probably got to add up a few different things, too.
Yeah, I think it probably
wasn't very exciting.
Yeah.
I just go back to that commercial that they run about the PGA Tour where they say they'll show a guy hit a shot and say, these guys are good. Remember that commercial, that marketing campaign?
Yep.
I can't remember maybe but a few shots where you could say, if you're watching on TV and you're a casual fan, nobody's hitting great shots. I know the course was tough.
What happened to everybody except for Keimer? That's a great point, Pat. It didn't even look like people were really playing their best golf. I know that if you take Keimer out of the tournament, you have a heck of a battle.
Yeah, that's true.
You have a typical – I think Payne Stewart won there at one under. You had two guys finish at one under who were eight shots behind Keimer. Also, Keimer did not do anything on the weekend to Tiger his lead, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't he didn't just absolutely destroy the field over the weekend after getting the lead. He just kind of, made sure that he won.
Yeah, he played it smart, but he took all the big numbers out of play for the most part. Here's the thing, going back a year, Jim, and this is the thing that's more significant to me than the last big blowout, which was McElroy crushing everybody in 11. But they went down. They lost almost 50% of the audience compared to Justin Rose's win last year at Marion. He also is a non-American. Now, Phil was in the mix late, but Tiger was not anywhere to be seen. And Justin Rose finished over par. But he was a close match. He only won by a couple of strokes. Jason Day was also in the mix. It was him and Phil that finished second tied at three over a couple strokes back. But, again, it was competitive. And I don't really care who is in the mix because I root for a lot of guys who aren't Americans to do well. I'd love to see Jason Day break through. We're all waiting on Lee Westwood to finally win one. To me, it's got to be competitive, though. That was the thing that got me sort of turned off to the whole deal was I don't care what the course looks like. I don't care if there's an American leading. I just want to see some drama at the end, and I'm usually pulling for extra holes. Like the best thing for us would have been an 18-hole playoff on Monday because it gives us something else to work with. But anyway.
Probably so. I think Keimer's a little more robotic than Rory is. I mean, if you had Rory up by nine, I think people would have been – tuned in a lot more. I think as they learn how good Keimer is and can watch him and appreciate his game, people might stay with him too. But again, to a high percentage of people who are just, not everyday followers of golf that like to tune into a tournament like the U.S. Open, he's a no-name to them, and it will take time for him to become somebody that matters. And he just won the Players too. He did something no one's ever done. He won the Players and the U.S. Open in the same year. I didn't even have him on my radar last week when we talked about, who would win. I had guys. Who'd I have? Scott. What's his name? Scott. Adam Scott. I've already forgotten him. He's already gone.
And that's the thing. He's not real. But there are plenty of guys over the years. Tim Duncan's another one. We talk about guys that are sort of, they go about their business. They're not real emotional. They're not going to make a big scene. Pete Sampras, that was one of the knocks on him when he was dominating tennis.
Love Sampras.
He's just not, it's not real sexy because he just goes and does his thing. He doesn't complain a lot. He's not real.
That's true. And verbose. Tennis kind of lost its audience somewhat that it had under McEnroe and Connors and some of those guys. Yeah. Boris Becker, who was from Germany, but he also had this pizzazz about it. Remember, he was always, diving and rolling all over Wimbledon and, playing hard. I don't know. Some guys are just the kind of guy that captivates the audience.
Right.
Yeah, we're missing Tiger something fierce.
Well, at the other end of the spectrum, of course, is World Cup soccer, and they celebrate every single thing, whether it's an injury or a goal, like it's the end of the world. And by the way, if you're watching, Algeria just scored on a penalty kick and took a 1-0 lead on Belarus, if you're the least been interested. But what's your level of interest in the United States, and what's your level of interest in the World Cup as a whole?
Me?
Yeah.
I wasn't able to watch much of it yesterday, but I was following it. On my phone. My ESPN app or whatever, just to kind of, and it seemed like it was pretty exciting. I never did get to see the highlights, but
really?
I understand that Dugan's, which is always a big place that y'all support and all that, had just a humongous crowd. And I think that some pictures of those are available on the Arkansas Times website.
Yes.
The crowd that was enjoying soccer at Dugan's. I don't think Ireland made the World Cup, did they? Did they not play soccer?
No, I don't think so. I think you're right.
What's the deal there? Why didn't Ireland?
That doesn't make any sense. It's like us not making the Olympics in basketball. It's crazy.
Yeah, but I guess England will be a big a big follow. But I'm excited that the U.S. was able to win, and I ended up reading a bunch of stories about their team and about what they're using this year. They're trying to use the diamond midfield approach. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah, that's the only kind I like to use myself.
That's what Liverpool used this year in the Premier League.
If you ain't using diamond, you ain't trying.
That's exactly right. Did you see the story about how the folks in Ghana had to borrow electricity from the Ivory Coast?
Isn't that amazing?
But here's my question. If those two ended up playing each other in the World Cup, is there some sort of conflict of interest there? It's like, look, we gave you all this electricity, man. You're going to have to let us win. Sorry.
Just cut them off. Yeah.
Crazy. All right.
Yeah.
Jim, I've got a question from a guy or a comment about Razorback football, so we're going to keep you before. Devin, go ahead. You're on with Jim Harris. How are you?
I was just on Twitter. I mean, I'm 17 years old. I've been keeping up with Razorback football, you know, since I could walk. But ESPN came out with the best, you know, quarterbacks since 2000. Schools have the best quarterbacks and most drafted tight ends and running backs. And I saw that Arkansas was number one since 2000. I was wondering what kind of edge that would give us in recruiting, you know, since, you know.
Okay, you'll have to give that to me one more time. Arkansas is number one in what now?
Running back since 2000. Most drafted and everything.
Okay.
Like the, and I was wondering, you know.
Come running back you. Well, that's pretty awesome when you look at.
Unless you're trying to recruit Phillip. Quarterbacks and receivers, maybe.
Well, yeah. We got a good job of that.
Yeah. We got Brett Bielema. I mean, you know, when he came in, we weren't going to be able to get the top notch receivers. But now that you can call yourself the running back, it's pretty big.
Yeah, we'll see, Devin. I appreciate
it. What I don't understand: if I was a receiver and a team had all the running backs that Arkansas has in a dominating running game, I think I'd want to go to Arkansas because I think my chances of being open, like Sammy Coates was last year for Auburn, the way they were running the ball.
Yeah.
I think I'd want to go to school like that because I'd be open so much.
I hope K.J. Hill feels that way.
Well, I don't see why he wouldn't. I mean, he has a chance to step in there and try to remember back how open Marcus Monk was all the time when Felix, Peyton and Darren were running wild in 2006. And then, and how much Arkansas suffered in 2007 in the first half of the season because Marcus Monk was hurt and they really didn't have, I think they had a freshman at that time, London Crawford, and, you know, a couple other guys who probably weren't as, you know, obviously they weren't in Marcus Monk's league. He was hurt, and how much Arkansas's offense struggled when Marcus was not out there. If I was a big-time receiver, and, I mean, you're not going to see double coverage much.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a single coverage guy. You're going to have a team focused on a running game. And, I mean, you could pile up some pretty humongous numbers if you're good enough and fast enough, and certainly K.J. Hill at North Little Rock is all of that.
Good point. Jim, appreciate the time very much. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, let's find out who Don Hudson is.
Yeah.
Playing now and next week. We're talking about the UALR situation.
Yeah, for those of you who are not familiar, we're actually going to talk to Chris Peterson, Jim. So if you are following that, you may want to listen in.
I will. I will listen in. I kind of want to know who this mystery guy is. The statewide daily doesn't seem to identify him in any way that you could pick up a phone and reach him.
Well, though? I don't know if it's that easy. I
don't know, but he's
let me tell you what I did do, though.
Forwarded the stuff to Deadspin.
Yeah, but for those of you who haven't heard about this, there is a lot of controversy. I'm sure most people are somewhat familiar with the UALR baseball situation. The chancellor sent an email out to some media folks, and it included emails sent by this guy that's accusing the baseball program of a number of missteps. And I emailed the guy to get a response from him to see if he was interested in coming on, knowing that Chris Peterson was going to visit with us in about 15 minutes. And it came back undeliverable. So I thought that was a little curious, Jim. I don't know about you, but that seems like a strange thing to me.
And somebody who knows how to rig their email to send and not receive, huh?
Or maybe who's somebody who doesn't want to have an email anymore because maybe they don't want all the attention they've stirred up.
I'm concerned about anybody who, and I'm only going by the story in the paper yesterday in the Democrat Gazette of someone who would basically kind of hold the program now hostage over stuff he's been able to glean. Someone who gets this kind of stuff is awfully close to the program and yet is not, you know, one of the two holdover assistant coaches because that person was asking that they be relieved too. So I'll be tuning in and listening to Chris Peterson and see what he has to say.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for the heads up on that. That's a good way to let people know about it. Jim Harris, SportingLiveArkansas.com. Chris Peterson of UALR. We'll talk about the baseball controversy.
Is he coming on after the break?
11:45. So actually, we got another segment before that. We're going to do a little. I've got a little bit of college football news you might find interesting.
Yeah, actually, I want to get into a little college football. I've been missing it lately. I got to be honest with you. Okay. I mean, I've been getting a lot of what the world would consider football. I haven't gotten a lot of American college football.
You more interested in Heisman Trophy candidates or top non-conference matchups in college football? And by the way, Arkansas only figures into one of those lists.
Both.
Well, you gotta.
But I don't know. Let me.
You think about it in the break.
It.
I'll let you decide when
because,
we come back.
Because I'll tell
we'll
you.
We'll go dealer's choice when we come back.
There's a lot of things that when I do have to make a tough decision like that piece of information you just laid upon me, I like to go to Maduro Cigar Bar and Lounge where I can unwind and relax with some friends and coworkers and just talk about all what's happened and what's going on in the world and make some real tough decisions.